Within the depths of our galaxy squat a great many foul and terrible things that would wish us naught but death. It is a terrifying place, the outer void, a place of teeth and eyes and wicked malice. Yet so too within our own worlds, our own societies, our very bodies, we are riven with foes more wicked still. The sinister moves amongst us, as the Arbetes and the Inquisition are oft to remind. Humanity is at once the greatest and most holy species to ever bestride the galaxy, and simultaneously a herd riven with corruption and malevolence, perched upon the precipice of doom and downfall. This is the world in which we are raised, a world constructed by those who rule us, a world beset by those that would destroy us. It is horrid beyond measure, a nightmare from whence none of us will ever wake, save for within the embrace of death. And even then, we may simply be food. Food for a hunger from beyond, a hunger that, in its evil, has embarked upon a means to ensure that its prey will walk into its maw willingly. Know then that this is a record of the serpent beneath, the beady eyes of a genophage that watches from the shadows, a record of gene-stealer cults. The gene-stealer was the first element of the Tyranid species ever encountered by the Imperium, although this was wholly unknown at the time. First discovered on the moons of Ymgarl, circa 550 M41, they were initially believed to be a hitherto unknown but phenomenally vicious strain of xenofauna, presenting significant issues for the planetary defense forces of the main planet in the system to contain and expunge. The resemblance to creatures discovered within the depths of space hulks was noted and appended to their Ordo Xenos files, but few Inquisitors were drawn to speculate quite how the species had managed to make it off such relatively isolated planetoids. The full connection was not made possible until centuries later, when the full and unholy mass of High Fleet Behemoth crashed into the eastern fringe of the Imperium, making for the realm of Ultramar. At the Battle of Macragge, the Ultramarines chapter of the Adeptus Astartes led their homeworld in its defense, and in a battle that has entered into the heroic annals of Imperial esteem, brought defeat against Behemoth, only at extreme cost. In the years of labor that followed, Biologis Adepts were able to draw links between records of the Ymgarl creatures and the bizarre four-armed shock troop organisms that had often served as the Tyranid vanguard upon the battlefields of Macragge. It was proven conclusively in the latter half of the 700s of M41 that gene-stealers were of Tyranid origin. Following this revelation, and as part of broader xenocidal procedures enacted by the Imperium in the wake of Behemoth's invasion, a detachment of the Salamander's chapter of the Astartes were dispatched to the moons of Ymgarl to purge the species from the volume. This xenocide included in its process the Sith, a large species akin to leeches, non-sapient, that the gene-stealers had clearly been utilizing as host organisms for their reproduction. This perhaps explains the bizarre deviation from baseline gene-stealers inherent in the Ymgarl strain. Those pronounced tentacles on their skulls replace the mouth of more common strains. The question remained, however, as to their origins, and it was most vexing. Several prominent inquisitors voiced their opinion that the Ymgarl strain represented a sort of tyrannic vanguard, scout organisms dispatched ahead of the main species to reconnoiter for prey. Lateral speculation has supposed the Gene Stealers were first introduced to the galaxy by High Fleet Tiamat, itself theorized to be a self-contained probe fleet targeted at a single system, after which it was named. This preceded Behemoth by many millennia, occurring in early M35. Others have pointed to the records surrounding High Fleet Ouroboros, which was theorized to be a completely unknown Xenos enemy that attacked the Helicon sector in M36. It is likely that the origins of the Gene Stealer, at least the origins within our galaxy, will never truly be known. The base fact is that for as long as the Tyranids have desired to consume humanity, it is certain that they were dispatching Gene Stealers in order to, well, assess us. In this, they have been hideously successful. While observed during the Battle for Ultramar as vanguard and shock assault elements to the Tyrannic armies, the Gene Stealer's main purpose is of an infiltration organism, bred to create, ferment, and ensure the destabilization of established societies. Their extremophile biology allows them to survive in nearly any environment, including the depths of space hulks unshielded within warp space. A Gene Stealer needs only bide its time with its purely alien patience, awaiting the moment it has an opportunity to sneak aboard an Imperial starship or crash land on a populated world, at which time it will begin to seek victims. These Xenos, of course, are not seeking to kill the hapless humans they encounter. Quite far from it. The Gene Stealer's body betrays the hand of the hive mind in its construction, with all the malice and sinister design it is capable of mustering. While one has elaborated on the fulsome nature of their form in a previous record, for the purposes of this one, we must concern ourselves with a sole, incredibly complex organ, the ovipositor, dwelling within the creature's mouth. Taking the place of the tongue in a human form, the organ presents as a hardened column of rigid, ribbed musculature. This is the Xenos' hideous means of reproduction. The tongue thing punctures the body of an unsuspecting prey, with the ovipositor delivering a minuscule embryonic organism into the host that contains Gene Stealer genetic material. Dubbed the Gene Stealer's Kiss by the more morbid of the Ordo Xenos, this process stuns the victim into unconsciousness. They will awake several hours later with no memory of the event, possessing now within them the unraveling, transformative genophage that is beginning to work upon their very DNA. This is the horror of Gene Stealer reproduction made manifest. The genetic material implanted within the unsuspecting host infects and changes the host's very being, their reproductive organs, their biology. Though they awake and return to their lives, unaware of what their bodies now contain, they are carriers of a wholly unique and utterly blasphemous genetic pathogen. They continue with their existence day to day, blithely ignoring the heresy of their own bodies, until such a time as they themselves reproduce, giving birth to a Gene Stealer hybrid. These first generation of creatures are wholly monstrous. In form, a revolting fusion of alien and human. Multiple limbs, bulging craniums, distended jaws, and chitinous plating jutting from their twisted bodies. Yet the parents do not perceive this reality, seeing them as children, cherubic delights, to be doted upon and lavished with care and attention. The horror of the Gene Stealer knows no bounds. Just as the host's biology is twisted to serve the Tyranid species, so too are their brains, warped genetically, so that these first hosts are utterly under the psychic thrall of their original infector. Victims come to view the Gene Stealer as a messianic figure, a subject of fanatical religious devotion that heralds the coming of a savior. By implanting many humans with this initial genophage, an individual Gene Stealer forms a group around itself, devotees that, in turn, bring fresh victims into the fold. What emerges is effectively a religious sect, dedicated to the worship and protection of their Xenos Messiah. It is the birth of a gene stealer cult. There is no better word. The original, pure strain gene stealer becomes a patriarch, an embodiment of worship, squatting at the cult center. The genetic material infesting the cultists' bodies doom their entire bloodline from this point on. It is unclear if a human can be cured of a gene stealer infection. One supposes that none amongst the Ordo Xenos or the Mechanicus Biologus have ever sought to try, but given what we understand about the Tyranids, one doubts there is much possibility in such a fate to begin with. The offspring of these first converts are vile hybrid things, warped combinations of Tyrannus and Sapien, hideous stains upon the concept of human purity. Commonalities in form have been documented. Needle-fanged predator maws, the bulging skull, an extra pair of limbs that ape their patrician in form. To a devout Imperial citizen, they would appear more Xenos beast than man. Their alien heritage is wrought clearly upon their bodies. Despite this, their holy human parents seek to care for them, nurturing them, ensuring that other propagation can continue. While appearing outwardly sound of mind and body, the original victims protect their offspring with a deranged intensity. It is crucial to the patriarch and the gene stealer birth cycle that the first generation, dubbed acolytes, reach maturity. These hybrids interbreed with baseline humans infected by the patriarch, allowing for the birth of a second generation that closely resembles the first, if erring slightly more towards human. A notable facet of these first two generations of hybrids is a tendency to produce what the Imperium has come to term aberrants. Hulking monstrosities that far eclipse their kin in size and strength, aberrants are dull of wit and misshapen in form, yet possessed of an animalistic loyalty to their patriarch and cult that, in combination with their prodigious musculature, make them useful tools. Quite how or why they emerge is unknown, even apparently to the leaders of a gene-stealer cult. Theories range from the misapplication of the ovipositor during initial genophase infection to conception during the waxing of immaterial instability. The human genome is, as one's students are no doubt aware, pliable. It is one of the reasons the gene stealer has found us such a rich bounty of prey. If one were to present a supposition, the aberrant strain is simply a facet of human-Xenos genetic interactions, a numerical likelihood that spits out something truly hideous. The largest and most promising aberrants are known as abominants, creatures selected by senior cult figures to receive additional attention and boons from the patriarch via specifically spawned creatures known as mindworm familiars. These diminutive things deliver further mutagens into the abominant, granting it regenerative capabilities and bulking up its already prodigious size. The resulting being is primed to lead its aberrant kin upon the battlefield. The third generation hybrids are sired from the interbreeding of the second generation and yet more captivated humans. These hybrids are the first to be nominally baseline passing, appearing more like one of their human parents than the alien beasts of earlier generations. Now becoming known as neophytes, the third generation is nevertheless still quite visibly removed from human baseline. They are perpetually stooped. Their skin is waxy, having a mauve hue. Their bald skulls sprout distinctive bone ridges upon their foreheads, and their serpentine tongues continuously flick around sharp teeth. Many, too, will have a third limb, although will seek to conceal it beneath bulky work clothing. At this point in the cycle, some neophytes will even lose the ovipositor that previous generations have possessed, being dubbed drones for their inability to continue the cult's propagation cycle. They can, however, still infect baseline humans with their blood, something various cults have been documented in attempting through blood donation and Medicaid program infiltration. Third-generation hybrids are deemed mutant by greater humanity, minimizing their ability to move among the larger population, as they are immediately shunned or hunted. This being said, they still have greater mobility than their previous kin. Fourth-generation neophytes are the most human passing of all infected gene-stealer cultists. While many may be virtually indistinguishable from regular humans, Ordo Xenos Inquisitors and Death Watch Astartes will opine that there are visual signifiers that should not go unignored. The pinkish skin of earlier generations gives way to an inevitably pale complexion with subtle mottling. And while the forehead ridges are almost entirely receded, fourth-generation hybrids are universally bald. A queer, uncanny quality is oft observed with this generation. But within the vast spectrum of human physical expression, it allows the hybrids to pass within human society effectively unnoticed, if not exactly without suspicion. Cults commonly target the lower socioeconomic tiers of Imperial society for infiltration and subversion. Resource extraction or heavy industry shift workers, administratum clerks, infrastructure staffers, all provide fertile ground for everything the cult needs. A ready supply of new recruits, easily disappeared civilians who will not be missed by anyone save their families and immediate superiors, all of whom are entirely replaceable. Likewise, these socioeconomic tiers are typically more forgiving of mutants and genetic aberrations, if only because, as one noted, should they die, they are entirely replaceable. Hybrid neophytes also work within these roles to secure intelligence and materiel for the cult. Mining workers or Planetary Defense Force militiamen can easily secure low-quality weaponry through theft and black market connections, while administratum clerks, when cannily placed, can procure a large variety of intelligence for their cult. Hybrid neophytes form locuses of command for baseline humans that have been converted with the gene stealer kiss, spreading the cult's influence with terrifying comprehensiveness. The fifth generation offspring of a gene stealer cult are born as pure strain gene stealers, the cycle completing itself in horrid apotheosis. Despite producing literal alien monstrosities, such is the power of the gene-stealer infection that the parents of these blasphemies still view them as beautiful infants to be cared for and adored. Depending on the status and size of the cult, these pure strains, who mature quite rapidly, will either be dispatched across the planet to propagate new cults in other metropoli, or smuggled off-world, destined to bring the Xenos taint to wholly new planets. Specialized hybrids of the fourth generation are often found in positions of power and influence above those of previous spawnings. A commonly observed genotrope of a gene-stealer infection is the Magus, so dubbed by Imperial authorities for their disturbing similarities to similar figures in mundanely religious or warp-driven cults. Figures bred with superlative intelligence and powerful charisma, they form natural sub-commanders for the Patriarch, a vessel for the monstrosity's word and will, but one far more capable of navigating human society. They are also, abominably, psychers, able to channel their Patriarch-given powers with sorcerous efficacy. One parent of a Magus is inevitably a psyker themselves. It has been noted by Ordo Xenos Inquisitors that during the third generation spawning period, a gene-stealer cult will specifically endeavor to find new converts with human psychic genetic markers that would allow for the creation of a Magus. Typically, younger cults will only produce and retain a single of such figures, although once numbers reach a certain quantity, more will be produced, unavoidably leading to fractious vying for their patriarch's favor. Such is the inevitable byproduct of the Magus's independence. A trade-off seemingly accepted by the patriarch for the hybrid's ability to represent the cult's clandestine interests more publicly within broader society. A fully mature gene-stealer cult is blasphemous in its scope and scale. Within the heart of the network of infected squats the patriarch, the original gene-stealer that spawned all who came after. Its psychic influence is total, touching the mind of all its children within a new spheric web known as the Brood Mind. Although not quite the gestalt hive mind of the Tyranids, it is nevertheless a rudimentary shared sentience that binds the cult tighter than any mere familial bond could, uniting the wretches of the first generation spawning with the near-human hybrids of later cycles. The aforementioned Magus is able to wield the Brood Mind as a method of control over its subordinates, as a means of inveigling the cult's ideology into the minds of weak-willed baseline humans, and as an offensive weapon should the need arise. All the cultists of a given world are termed by the Inquisition as an infestation, while cultists of any given population center, say, for example, a single hive city, are known as a gene sect. The number of gene sects on a world is wholly dependent on the population size of that world. A cult is extremely wary of not overextending itself, lest its infection be discovered and exterminated. So very few move with unseemly speed, preferring to bide their time as brood cycles produce new hybrids at a steady pace. Individual gene sects may vary in composition and character, while all are controlled by one fourth generation hybrid, typically a Primus, Nexos, or Magus, and all firmly under the thrall of the original patriarch. A world will typically only support a sole patriarch. Within the structure of a cult and its malignant biophagic system, there is little room for others. Should calamity befall the cult with the death of its patriarch, a new gene-stealer pure strain, typically from the initial infection brood, or fifth generation, will mutate and assume the role. One noted exception to this are in instances where an infection occurs on a world of inordinately high population numbers and density, essentially one whose populace is that of several planets over. In such cases, a patriarch will dispatch a pure strain gene stealer to begin the infection cycle anew, but this will very rarely happen in contiguous land masses, due to the psychic backlash that could result from two separate brood minds clashing on the etheric plane. It is quite dangerous. It has been noted, of course, that these two patriarchs would then be competing for resources, and would likely spawn conflict. There have been documented instances where, unbeknownst to Imperial authorities, a shadow war has been brewing and then erupts within the depths of a world, as two gene-stealer cults vie for control. The purpose of the gene-stealer cult is not solely propagation. Although expanding itself is the primary objective of any infestation, the secondary aim is the destabilization of the society it squats within, to bring about a spiritual revelation, often called the Day of Ascension. While the actual name varies between infestation and even gene sect, Ordo Xenos Inquisitors have compiled treatises detailing broad mimetic similarities. All gene-stealer cults operate as a religion, whose core dogma tells of the coming of divine beings, gods that will uplift the faithful from their squalor, rewarding piety with heavenly apotheosis. This worship is, of course, not voluntary. Devotion is embedded into the very genes of hybrids, and all are controlled by the patriarch via the brood mind. The faithful are unwitting servants, but this only makes their zealotry all the more useful. It is also a vector through which the cult can lure unsuspecting, uninfected, into their thrall. The Imperium, already a society underpinned by unquestioning faith in the god Emperor, whose worship is conducted in a dizzying array of locally adapted dogmatica, provides fertile ground for poorly educated, credulous, or simply desperate people to be lured to prayer meetings by neophyte hybrids posing as ministerium adepts, community leaders, or merely concerned citizens. The religious fervor of the cult is a phenomenal force of social control. It is a superlative motivating factor, granting the cult an in-group that excuses their malformed bodies and hideous visages. These things are now blessings, marking them out as sacred in their own right, binding them together with shared purpose. Likewise, the cult will readily and eagerly begin to amass weapons, undermine local authority, and prepare the world for the ascension that is imminent. The unconverted populace are heathen unbelievers, those that shall be subjected to righteous judgment from the gods when they arrive. The faithful shall be spared, and the heretics damned. A rousing mytho-narrative, one common in religious sects across time and space. Sub-prophecies are oft spun out of this core dogma by individual gene sects, usually tailored to specific local conditions by canny magi in order to expand the cult's reach across the infested world. A cult manifesting on a world controlled by the ecclesiarchy will adopt deeply hierarchical religious trappings, while one upon an Adeptus Mechanicus Forge world will likewise tailor its beliefs to align with those of the machine god. As the cult expands, so too does the strength of their religion, as well as its urgency. The day of ascension becomes ever more imminent, the needs of the gods ever more pressing. The insurrection, the paving of the way for these great beings of the rapture, is now inevitable. And this is the moment a gene-stealer cult will rise to war. Armed insurrection is typically the penultimate phase in the life cycle of a cult. This will generally occur within several cycles of brood spawning. The cult is, after all, pitching itself against the military juggernaut of the Imperium of Mankind. And for all the alien horrors of the hybrids, they require planning, supplies, and coordination before an effective insurgency can be mounted. Mature cult, however, will have members stationed in every strata of society it can reach. Spreading their infection from the shadows, the sundry cracks in both infrastructure and civilization that the rotting Imperium provides will equip the cult with any number of advantages. Municipal employees can bring whole cities paralyzed to a halt. Communications officers can stymie vox transmissions that would alert a world's defenders or petition for aid. Corrupted ministerium officials can whip up religious fervor amongst the unconverted masses, sowing riots to disguise cult activities. Gene-stealer cult insurrections are rarely spontaneous things that emerge out of nowhere. They are preceded by waves of sabotage, assassinations, and general social disturbances. Asymmetrical warfare is the name of the game here. The cult relies upon it, utilizing every advantage at their disposal where blunt force simply would not work. The destabilizing world, its institutions racked by disruption from within, will flail about in panic, and a smart cult will exploit this even further. They are very careful in this approach. Many an infestation has been doomed by moving too quickly or eagerly, exposing itself to the powers that be, and all the capabilities and will to annihilate them without prejudice they possess. A specific fourth-generation hybrid, the cult Nexos, is typically spawned within a mature cult to handle stratagems required for an insurrection, alongside the Tlamavus, an expert in the dissemination and disruption of information. Just as the hive mind produces specialized entities for war, so too does the brood mind of a gene-stealer cult provide stock genotypes for use in specific instances. Other examples of this include the assassin Sanctus, or the biophagus, many of whom disguise themselves as local Medicaid officials to further spread the cult's infectious genes. These war leaders are generally responsible, alongside cult primuses, for determining when and where cult assets will be deployed, and when the cult is in the best position to begin its rising in force. While all cults are intended to wait for a specific day of ascension, local exigencies will often force their hands. In this galaxy of ours, there are reasons sundry for which this may occur. An orc wa could make planetfall. A chaos cult on the world could open a warp rift, flooding an already infected city with demons. A Drukhari slave raid could target supposedly helpless populations that are in fact gene-stealer infected. A mining planet could delve too greedily and too deep, uncovering a tomb complex of the ancient Necrons. Any cult's initial response is typically to weather a storm that it faces. Better to simply incur losses and abide in secrecy, for to risk discovery is to risk everything. Should the situation for an imperial world appear disastrous, however, the cult will move to a war footing like a nest of vipers disturbed, lashing out at whichever side of the conflict poses them the most risk. For imperial planets already facing invasion or catastrophe, this is a bitter thing indeed. Even if the gene-stealer cult is victorious against invaders, the Imperium now has a separate Xenos incursion on its hands. In such cases, where Imperial control of a planet falls to a cult, the Patriarch becomes a planetary ruler, the world wholly under its reign, abiding for the day when the gods come for it. These are extraneous circumstances, of course. For a successful cult, its secrecy will be forever maintained, generation after generation, growing ever stronger until, one day, a psychic shadow will descend upon the world that the infestation has riven through. It may have been many centuries since the Patriarch first arrived. The bloated, corpulent thing it has become still recognizes the etheric blanket that has fallen. The shadow in the warp, the first sign of the approach of a hive fleet. The Astronomicon dims, the light of the Emperor himself caught in a strange psychic dusk. Astropathic communication becomes impossible. The world is now cut off from greater humanity. Cult agents embedded within planetary defense systems soon detect forms on long-range auspexes. Something has translated in-system. For the cult, this is a moment of religious ecstasy. The star gods are here at last. The day of ascension is nigh. Prophecies galore are consulted and deemed fulfilled. Frothing magi extol the coming of revelation to their brethren. Should an insurgency not already be underway, the military action of the cult will now intensify wholly. Entire regiments of local Imperial Guard battalions are now revealed to be hybrids in disguise, a pattern replicated amongst planetary defense regiments. Imperial control is rapidly collapsing, as these well-equipped insurgents are joined by earlier generation hybrids revealing themselves at last, setting upon the defenders with repurposed mining and industrial equipment, purloined vehicles, improvised explosives, and often bare tooth and claw. As the planet tears itself apart, tyrannocyte spores fill the skies, fleshy sacks plummeting from the heavens. Jubilation explodes within the cult. Their banners waved at the skies in the hopes of attracting the attention of the angelic host. Even as these drop sacks split open and disgorge Xenos monstrosities beyond description, the cult continues to fight on their behalf. So impossibly deep does their devotion run. seeds of doubt may begin to root within the minds of some. Yet such is the devotional fervor that even these skeptics are swept along with the tides of violence and horror that are unfolding. The hive mind recognizes its spawn. Tyranid xenoforms do not attack cult members. The genetic markers of the gene stealer Kiss wards the cult from their attentions. In utter blasphemy to all things good and holy, cultist and tyranid fight as kin. Once the Imperium is toppled, its defenders laid low, its guardsmen slaughtered, Astartes consumed, Sororitas eviscerated, the cult, elated by the coming of their angelic kindred, approach the alien invaders, often literally with open arms, expressions of religious ecstasy upon their countenances. It is then that the final revelation of the gene stealer cult occurs. The cult are indeed embraced by the slavering maws of the tyrannids they had unknowingly been bred to serve. The Hive Fleet tears cult hybrids to bloody shreds, disemboweling, desecrating, consuming. The cult reels in confusion, stunned by this level of betrayal. Their deliverers have turned to devils before their very eyes. The worldview collapses, unwavering loyalty turning swiftly to panic, as, rudderless but still feeling intense genetic compulsion, they cast about looking for a simple reason why. Many flee back to the embrace of the patriarch, seeking comfort, security, an iota of safety in that figure that has led them for countless years. Those that do find anything but succor in their sire. The patriarch has become subsumed into the hive mind once more, losing all sentience and agency as it returns to that which created it. The patriarch and the cult's pure strain gene stealers now attack the hybrids they had once called kin. Indeed, the pure gene stealers are often the ones to kill their baseline human parents, who, in the throes of their delusions, see their precious cherubs morph into monsters before their very eyes. This is the fate of every gene stealer cult should the Hive Fleets reach their original infiltration organism, the Patriarch. The veil is lifted, forcibly, from their eyes and minds. Even their genetic subservience cannot stymie the assault of such a brutal reality. It is nigh certain that each and every cultist, each and every hybrid thing, perishes with the fulsome, terrible awareness of exactly what is happening. Even those who manage, somehow, to flee both their kindred and the invading tyrannids are granted but the briefest respite to wallow in their grief. They cannot survive. The Hive Fleet's organisms are now consuming the planet at a molecular level. Gaseous expulsions from the rendering pools turn the atmosphere into a noxious hellscape, choking to death the final few survivors of the invasion. These corpses are recovered by processor organisms and flung into vast acidic digestion lakes, wherein they dissolve, piece by piece, into organic slurry, raw biomatter fuel for the hive ships, sucked skyward through monstrous capillary towers. It is the destiny of a gene stealer cult to end this way, their very matter mixing with that of the host population in a sickening sludge to feed a creature whose mind spans galaxies. In the end, there is no us or them, no heretics, or faithful. Certainly no gods. Only a hunger that defies comprehension. One's students, immersed in this particular lore, may scoff at the delusions of a gene-stealer cult. They may, and in some ways quite rightly, view them as pathetic things, to be pitied. Victims of a truly grim and ultimately apocalyptic fate that they quite willingly seem to submit themselves to. One would caution students taking comfort in their zealotry, in high-handedly refusing to succumb to the sin of empathy. Do not fall into the trap of thinking these wayward, victim things possess any capability to exercise their own agency. Several inquisitors have commented on their writings that the Imperium is a perfect breeding ground for gene-stealer cults, just as human bodies are for their infectious genetic material. Quite aside from our insatiable drive to colonize every corner of the galaxy, to exploit every resource it offers, quite aside from the increasing instances of the Psyker genome within our populations, it is the fact that for the Imperium's numberless citizens, their lives are so brief, so terrible, and so deprived of any state protections, that developing a cult within our society is frighteningly easy. A commonly observed trope amongst gene-stealer cults on populous worlds, with especially thriving industrial sectors, is the prevalence of hybrids amongst laborer populations. With these humans seen as little better than chattel slaves by the corporate bodies that manage these economies, a cult can readily move amongst them, swaying converts and igniting unrest as they appeal to the inhumane working conditions, punishing shifts, and high mortality rates that these workers daily face. Whether they offer religious respite from a cruel existence, an opportunity to find higher purpose or community, or simply revenge against the powers that be, gene-stealer cults have ripe opportunities. The Imperium's rigid hierarchies, unquestioning dogma, and inbuilt inequalities foster social conditions primed for exploitation. Citizens deprived of healthcare will seek local remedies, falling into the hands of cult biophagi posing as Medicaid staff. Corrupted ministerium priests can easily exploit the belief systems of the Emperor deified to convert members into secretive sects that promise true deliverance. Hybrids that assume positions of power are often able to wield staggering authority, rarely questioned by subordinates lest these individuals risk their own lives for the temerity. Cults must still use guile to avoid detection. As often visible mutants, they are naturally to draw the eyes of suspicion, and the more of them that plague the Imperium, the better the Inquisition will become at detecting their operations. Discovery too early within a brood cycle means death. The Imperium is nothing if not extremely willing to use lethal force, indiscriminately, to ensure a full purge of gene-stealer genetics from a population. That being said, cults have demonstrated a truly terrifying degree of patience and skill at social manipulation. Their infiltration vectors are manifold, exploiting social inequality, wealth inequality, hierarchical disparity, even personal insecurities of roles within society, all to bring new converts to receive the gene stealer's kiss. The Imperium sows the seeds of its own destruction through the suppression of its population in these respects. What desperate person would not accept a kindly hand in these circumstances? Alas, in this case, the hand is all too late discovered to be a claw. One must say that the truly disquieting aspect of this whole hideous system appears to be the hive mind's knowledge of our own social ills and the wheels by which our civilization turns. That we have bred so much inhumanity into the very way we structure the world that a thing that wishes to do naught but devour us wholly. It terrifies me more than I can say. I must rest. The hour grows late, and the darkness feels altogether hungrier. Until such a time as I may commit further records to this archival stack, Ave Imperator. Gloria in excelsis terra. This video and this channel were made possible thanks to the very kind donations and support from my Patreon subscribers. If you'd like to help support the channel, head on over to patreon.com/oculusimperia. If you'd like to receive more updates about the channel and any future videos, you can contact me or follow me on Twitter @OculusImperia. Otherwise, please like, subscribe, comment, let me know your feedback, and as ever, thank you very much for watching.